This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. A with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie? What's going on in your garden?
You know what? I'm in the studio today, so I have no idea what's going on in my garden. No, I'm kidding.
Fair enough.
I've been in Toronto for the last couple of days, but it is raining right now, which is lovely. Nice soft showers, I guess. Big rain more in the northern part of the province, but certainly here in southern Ontario, it's perfect. It's one of those April showers for the next few days just to bring on those beautiful, beautiful flowers. So, everything's great. My garden's been coming along just nice.
Excellent. We're getting the rain up here in the Collingwood area as well, and we're supposed to have it for the next few days as well. And you're right, it's coming down at a nice, gentle pace, which I guess allows the ground to absorb it better, right?
Exactly. After such a dry winter, every bit of rain is absolutely appreciated when it comes to the ground, the trees, everything needs water. And the more we can fill up the soil, fill up all the different water tables as high as we possibly can, it's a good thing for the coming summer because you know it's going to get hot and dry at some point.
Indeed. Okay, I know you, I think, have an announcement, but I'm going to give out the numbers first. Good. We'd love for you to give us a call if you live in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or anywhere else in the province of Ontario, outside Toronto, 1-866-740-4740. And do let Ashy know, our producer Ashy, if you are a first-time caller, because then she'll let us know, and I will give you your garden wings. And our mantra is the same all the time. Please call often. Please call early. And one question per call, please. So we give everybody a chance. Okay, what do you got there, Charlie?
Okay, I really missed you and your chimes last week. You should have heard me fumbling
well,
around.
I missed you, too.
I fumbled around.
It felt very odd.
I changed the ringer on my phone to try and come up with some chimes, and now I can't remember what my original ringer was. So now my phone is a mess. What can I say?
That's very funny.
You know, we
I love it.
Don't be abandoning me again like that, okay?
No, okay. You got it. I will try and limit that. Absolutely.
All right, good stuff. So tomorrow, Sunday, April 28th, 1:30 p.m., wonderful thing to do on a rainy Sunday, go to the Toronto Botanical Gardens, 777 Lawrence Avenue East at Leslie in Toronto. The Toronto Bulb Society is meeting and is having a daffodil flower show. So you'll probably get your socks blown off with the beauty of the daffodils that people will bring in to compete with. You know, it's a very competitive world, that horticultural world. But meanwhile, Laura Grant will also be speaking, and her subject is bog gardens for geophytes and other plants. And you say to yourself, what are they? Well, it turns out Laura is a very successful grower of lotus. Lotus is that beautiful floating, flowering, water plant. So she's going to teach everybody how to grow lotus. And she's also going to talk about orchids and many other plants. Everyone is welcome tomorrow, 1:30, Toronto Botanical Gardens.
Fabulous. Okay. Sounds great. I think now we will go to our break and we will be right back. But, you know, we have lots of room on the line, so do give us a call. Again, the number is 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show on this 27th of April. It's hard to believe, Charlie, that we're almost at the end of April.
Almost, I know. But things are looking so nice and green. I mean, here in Toronto, the magnolias are in full bloom. There's lots and lots of bulbs. It's a very pretty time of year.
It is, indeed. I have to tell you that my wife, Gail's been a little bit just frustrated because we have tulips popping up all over our lawn.
Uh-huh.
And she equates this to the squirrels that have apparently taken it upon themselves to transplant tulips from our garden into the lawn.
Ever the designers, those squirrels, or redesigners. Funny they would plant them in the lawn. You think that'd be a bit of a hard spot to plant them? Usually they move them around in the garden, I find.
Yeah, like we've never planted tulips in the lawn.
I'm not surprised.
She looks, she goes, look at her. I got like a dozen tulips popping up all over my grass.
Yeah.
Oh, funny stuff.
Well, get the mower. You can always mow them down if you don't want to see them for, you know, for the, in the future.
It's going to make my job more difficult. I'm going to have to mow around the things for good.
Probably things, so. not a good idea. Look very silly.
It will. Okay, let's go to our first caller. We have June on the line. June is calling from Pickering. Welcome to the Garden Show, June.
Well, hello. Good morning, both of you. How are you today?
Morning. Great.
We are well.
Good. Well, I have a bit of a problem with my forsythia. I have two quite large bushes in the back, but they didn't go yellow this year. Oh. They are blooming. I mean, the leaves are coming out and they look good, but I don't know what I did wrong.
Probably you pruned at the wrong time.
Oh.
So remember with forsythia, the only time we prune forsythia is right after they bloom. So most of them are in full bloom right now. We're seeing lots of bright yellow shrubs everywhere, and that's great. And in the next, you know, with all the rain, and then it's going to get very warm, I understand, next week. And that's going to shorten the bloom time on things like forsythia. So by this time next week, it'll be get out the loppers and do whatever kind of pruning or shrinking of large overgrown forsythia that you wish to do, and then leave them alone until next spring, and they should be blooming next spring.
Oh, okay. Well, I can do that. I know I do need to trim because they are getting very thick in the center.
Mm-hmm.
So the next year, if I do that, say in the next couple of weeks, mm-hmm. they should bloom next year.
They should. But try and get to that rejuvenation, if you will, as soon as possible after they've bloomed. Because what will happen is a whole bunch of growth is going to start and you'll be cutting that all off. So what you want is you want to first do all your pruning, and then when all the new growth happens, you just leave it alone.
So I didn't have any blooming at all this year, so I can bloom any time then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and remember, take out the older stems first. Like, there's going to be some big old ones at the bottom, thicker than the others. If you can, get out the saw and get those big ones out first, the older, bigger ones, if they're really old, you know, if they're 10 or more years old. And then that will, again, rejuvenate, send up some nice, fresh, new growth, which, again, is more likely to bloom next year.
Oh, thank you. I will do that. Right. Thanks a lot. We learned so much from you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks
bye
for
bye
calling.
Bye-bye. Have a good day.
Thanks for the call there, June. Charlie, I have to tell you, we had our first wee disappointment of our season this year because of the colder temperatures. We have a small, I think you'll recall because you were up at the house, a small like a magnolia tree.
Uh-huh.
A bush in front,
yeah.
And it started to bloom, but then we had these
frost
temperatures that went down just below zero, and it kind of, all the blooms become very droopy in the last couple of days, so
yeah,
they just kind of just nipped them.
Frosted off.
Yeah,
too
they did.
Bad. Yeah, you know, it's interesting you mention that, because I was in a backyard of a friend of mine in North York on Thursday, and he's got fruit trees, quite a lot. He's all about fruit. Well, it's Stephen Biggs. You remember, we've had him on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And he does a lot with edibles, and his daughter is the tomato queen. So, but his fruit trees were all, the flowers were there. The flowers were actually opening. And in terms of that frost, because his fruit trees are trained against a fence, he had draped a sheet over them for that cold, Wednesday night, I guess, was the really cold night. And then he wasn't too worried about them for the second cold night. But yeah, that would have happened to some of the commercial growers. They would have been in deep trouble because the warmth and then the cold.
Yeah. Yeah. And in hindsight, had I been watching the weather enough, I probably, it's small enough or big enough, I could have thrown something over top of it. I didn't even think of it. But it really, they were just, you know, at the sort of, not their full bloom, but about two-thirds of the way out. And then we noticed the next day that they're all kind of limped over and that frost got them, which is a shame because we, you know, you wait all year for these things to bloom and you get a couple of weeks out of it, you know, and then that's it. And if you miss it, you got to wait another year.
And magnolias are just not that pretty, really, when they're not blooming. They're just green leaves. No. They don't even give you fall color. The bark isn't even very exciting. Like, it's just about the flowers, nothing else. So too bad.
Indeed. Yeah. Okay. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give out the numbers. We have lots of room in the lines, folks. Give us a call. Don't hesitate. If you have an indoor gardening question or you have an outdoor gardening question, you might have a pruning question or a transplanting question, or maybe you are thinking of starting those seedlings inside, and whatever the question might be, you know, Charlie is here to answer it. So give us a call at 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, this is Zoomer Radio, and you're listening to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. And Charlie, let's go to our, we have a caller on the line. We have a couple now. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Maureen. She's calling from North York. Welcome to The Garden Show, Maureen.
Oh, good morning. Wow, I'm on right away.
Morning.
Morning.
Yes. Okay, my question is about dahlias, or some people say dahlias. Anyway, I have some dahlia bulbs, Charlie, and they're starting to sprout. Mm-hmm. Now, it says I should plant them after the first frost, but because they're sprouting and it's going to be warm next week, I'm wondering if I should actually get them in the ground now.
I wouldn't. Yes, I wouldn't. If you can, Maureen, if you have some pots, potting mix, get them into pots indoors. I would not trust that there is not more cold weather coming. I mean, you could always take them outside and plant them outside, but be prepared to cover them if we're getting anywhere close to 5 degrees or less. And that is very likely, I would say, in the next few weeks. So remember, there's that process when things are tender inside and then we harden them off to take them outside. And I know it's been mild and we're all excited and it's like, get the garden going. But if you can hold off, I keep them inside.
Okay. When I do put them in the ground, I have, my front has full sun. It gets pretty hot.
Perfect.
The back is part, that's where I want. I want, see what wants really hot, right?
Full sun is good.
Okay. Thank you, Charlie. Nice to be able to see you.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Hello. Anybody who's watching on the web can see me because we are, what's it called? Webcast, I guess, where I've got cameras and a microphone in front of me. So thanks, Maureen. And later in the show, I think Dean might read that cute little squirrel story you sent to us a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Great. It made me laugh.
And me too.
Okay. Then. Bye-bye. Have a good day.
You too.
Indeed, yes, I have the squirrel story all lined up for us to get to in a little bit, for sure.
And,
yes, indeed.
And Dean, in case,
okay, the numbers.
I was just saying, Dean, in case anybody wants to send me cute stories or photographs,
I'll give
of
the email.
Successes or problems. Email's very good when it comes to identification stuff. But yeah, happy to receive
indeed.
Email. So feel free to. Do you want to do my email?
Yep. It's c.dobbin. So c.dobbin at mzmedia.com. Yeah. So if you have something that's, you know, they say a picture, you know, is worth 1,000 words, and sometimes it really is easier to just send a photo and say, okay, this is what I'm dealing with, then feel free to send Charlie an email. Absolutely. Okay. Let's go to our next caller. We have Judy on the line. Judy is calling from Oakville. Welcome to The Garden Show, Judy.
Thank you. Hi, good morning, Charlie and Dean. How are you?
Good morning.
Excellent. Well,
Charlie, I've been reading about hammerhead worms. Do we have them yet in Ontario, and what do we do? And
okay, so that's a really good question because I have no idea. Hammerhead worms.
Yes.
I think I was reading something about them the other day as well, and if I'm remembering the right ones, they were saying for gardeners to wear gloves because apparently they have a toxin in them that can be... Is that right, Judy? Is that what you're referring to?
That's what I read. And it's also said that they're very invasive and they completely enclose our regular worms and squeeze them to death. I know. Yuck.
Yeah, really.
Well, okay, they're a friendly bunch. They should start hanging out with the grackles that, you know... invade my bird feeders.
Yeah, and I don't know if the robins eat them, if they're poisonous to the robins. I mean, if they're poisonous to us, perhaps to the birds as well. But yeah, the article was pretty scary, but it didn't mention whether or not they had come up to southern Ontario or not.
Yeah, apparently, yes, you're right. This has just been in the news very recently. I guess I should listen to the news more often. But yeah, just as of Friday, there's both City TV and CTV are reporting that there are hammerhead worms in Ontario. They have been spotted. I think it's at Hamilton. I'm just looking. Yeah, so... All right, so this is the thing. So what is a hammerhead? It's obviously an invasive species that's come from Southeast Asia. The assumption is it arrived into Canada through the U.S. in soil, inside pots.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons we don't move soil across borders is because of what travels in the soil.
Right.
And, yeah, they do really have a funny-looking head.
Mm-hmm.
Found in Ontario. So iNaturalist.ca is reporting. So back to 2019, there were a few reports, but they're not serious harmful to people at all. But they can make a rash on your skin, so always wear gloves. And I wear gloves anyway. You never know when you're digging in the garden what cat has been using your garden as a cat. Situation.
True.
And main thing is, I guess, is stay alert. If you do see this worm, grab it, jar it, bag it, freeze it, and then you want to get in touch with the Ministry of Natural Resources and let them know that you have something like this has happened. You've got it on the property, because that's part of what's going on is tracking.
Okay. Yeah, so Hamilton, they're on the way to Oakville then, too.
Likely, just like so many other things that, you know, once they arrive, they're here.
Yeah, yeah.
The article that I've got up is saying they've seen them in Newmarket, Hamilton, in the Kitchener area.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is the other thing that startles me. Mm-hmm. Apparently, they say they can grow up to 3 feet in length.
Oh, so it's like a snake.
Well, it almost, 3 feet, that's crazy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, at least they'll be easy to spot.
Yeah.
Yes.
They probably would need very warm temperatures to get that big. And so in Ontario, they probably wouldn't get that big. That'd be more like a South Carolina size, I would think.
Right.
But,
that's crazy.
But yes, I guess more to learn, because, you know, whether it's hammerhead worms or you've heard about the jumping worms, which is also, you know, they're a problem invasive worm. And of course, our earthworms are actually not even native to Canada. So yes, things do get moved around, not always to the benefit of any of us.
That's right. Okay, thank you for that information.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
You as well.
Bye-bye.
Too.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. I feel like one of those movies coming on, like The Blob, right?
Yeah.
The hammerhead.
Well, they're pretty ugly when you look at the pictures.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, gosh. What are you gonna do?
Another thing on the radar, right? You know, but I guess that's just nature, right? I mean, this has been around. I mean, I remember as a kid seeing movies about locusts, you know, when they come, and that's a pretty terrible thing when they arrive as well.
Well, and then there was the Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yes, the Little Shop of Horrors. I did that show years ago.
Did you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I did that probably back in about 1990 or something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's not, just to be clear, it's a fantasy story as opposed to the locust, which is not, nor are these worms.
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, but that's pretty crazy. Again, what I was reading just is, I guess the toxin is very similar to what you would find in a puffer fish. So it's, as you say, Charlie, it's more of a rash for human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just and one more thing to watch for. But keep going outside. Everybody stay, you know, you need your vitamin D either way. So just keep getting outside no matter what invasive 3-foot worms are out there to greet you on your driveway. You won't know it's there unless you go out to see it.
You know what we should do, Charlie? We should form worm busters, you know?
Oh,
we'll arrive with our big laser guns.
Ashley's up for it. Ashley's going to be one of the busters.
Three of us. We'll show up with our backpacks.
Exactly. Hazmat suits.
You got it. We're ready to go.
For sure.
Okay. Let's go to our next caller. We have Lewis on the line from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Lewis.
Good morning, Dean and Charlie. How are you?
Morning. Excellent. How are you?
Good. I'm fine. My question is regarding, have you heard of holy basil?
Yeah. Also known as Thai basil.
Yeah, Tulsi and East Indian.
Yeah.
So I have the seeds, and they're very, very, very small.
Mm.
And I've tried putting them in like a seedling mix, and they won't sprout. So then I tried on a dish, like just spraying some water on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of like chia seeds. They get very gelatinous.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, it takes a while, but eventually they do sprout. And then the issue is I need to take tweezers to put them into the soil, and they end up dying.
Oh. Huh. So, okay, my suggestion to start from seed, just in a regular seed mix, as you mentioned. So you've got very small, whether it's little peat pots or little cell packs, you've got your seedling mix in, or you're using the Jiffy Sevens, I think they're called, you know, the little pop-up things.
Yeah.
Either way, moist. Everything's moist. Now, what I do is I plant two seeds at a time into each of my little cells, regardless of whether it's basil or lettuce or whatever it is. I always do two seeds.
Okay.
What is very important when it comes to basil in general is heat. This is a plant that loves heat. So they grow well, obviously, in the summer, in the hot summer. But to get them to germinate, if you can provide some heat from below, at first you don't need light on your seeds, right? There's nothing above ground. So on top of the refrigerator can be optimal because it's always warm on top of a fridge. It's dark, but it's warm. Or I've done, you know, the heating pad or the proper heating mat under that my seeds, and they will usually, I find Thai basil, maybe 10 days to sprout.
Okay.
And once the little tiny little greens start to sprout, now we need light, of course, and then into proper light, but maintain that heat in order to keep that growth going, because you want some, you know, good sized plants to get out at the end of May.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, that'll help. Yep. Yeah,
that's what I would do. I think the idea of the petri dish, or sometimes people germinate in paper towel, moist paper towel, because then you can really see that the seed is now germinated. But the trick is with those tweezers, getting it in, just you would just basically place that little newly germinated seed on the surface of moist soil. And then,
Like I was trying to put them in a little bit, but it gets covered with soil and they die.
That's right. No, just place them on the surface, and then maybe a little piece of saran wrap or a hood over top, again, just to maintain that little greenhouse moisture idea. That you may find that they will, because the roots will always go down and the stems will always go up. You don't need to worry about that.
Okay. Perfect.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Bye bye.
Take care.
Thanks very much for the call. Yeah, I was just picturing Lewis there with tweezers.
That is
dedication.
It sure is. Well, and he talked about them being like chia seeds. What I think really dedicated is begonias. Begonia seeds are so small, you can't even really see them. Like, they're so tiny. I've seen like 500 begonia seeds is about a quarter of a thimble. Like, it's...
Oh, my Lord.
They're so tiny. I remember somebody showing me, like, a little vial. There's 500 seeds in this vial, and it, you know, it's $2,000 worth of seeds or something. But it was such a tiny little bit of seeds. And, yes, hard to plant.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Stephanie on the line from Etobicoke. Welcome to the Garden Show. Stephanie.
Morning, Charlie and Dean.
Morning.
I have two endless summers, and they're both... kind of situated under a clematis that sprouts and blooms all over the place. And I would like to move one of the hydrangeas, the one that is completely covered under the clematis. When's the best time to move it?
Now is a good time. How long have they been there?
Oh, probably about 10, maybe 12 years.
Right. So the longer something's been somewhere, the harder it is to move just because of the established root system.
Right.
So early in the spring, like now, they're just starting to bud, right? There's no leaves on them yet. Now is a good time. You are going to be leaving roots behind, obviously. That goes without saying. But then again, you're also cutting your hydrangea down, you know, quite dramatically in the spring. So feel free to bring all the little stems down to about 4 inches tall and lift the biggest root ball that you can with soil around those roots. Use an old sheet or a piece of burlap or whatever you have to do to get down and hold that soil around the roots so that when you're moving the shrub and you've got the hole pre-dug and ready to go, it's just sort of straight across and down into the hole. And there's, like I said, soil around those roots.
Right.
if you can.
I never do cut down the endless summer hydrangeas.
Mm, I would for the purposes of trans.
I was told that if you do, then you won't get blooms the next year.
No, when they introduced endless summer, that was the big claim to fame, was that it is such a great shrub because, you know, it's the hydrangea that we love with the big round blooms. But the claim to fame was it blooms on both new wood, as in the growth this season, but also old wood, which is the growth last season. So you can cut them down as much as you want. You will get new growth. You should get flowers. Do you find that your endless summer blooms pretty consistently on the old wood?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I think one year, because I had three hydrangeas in the same spot, so I moved one of them a few years ago, and I did cut it back, and the next year didn't have any blooms. It's taken a while to kind of reestablish itself in the new spot. It doesn't seem to, you know, grow as vigorously as the one that's the farthest away from the clematis.
Okay, well, it does take a, you know, never expect bountiful blooms or bountiful above ground growth when you move a plant, because it should all be, it should be all about new roots that first year, at least first 2 years. So yeah, never be surprised when the plant looks like it's not doing anything, but it really is underground doing stuff. And so that, that does take a couple of years, and make sure that you're going into great soil. Make sure you've amended your soil. You've, if, you know, worm castings, which of course is something that the Riverdale Hort Society was putting together for pickup starting this weekend, composted manure at any of the garden centers, whatever, triple mix, just make sure you've got great soil. All the hydrangeas like morning sun and afternoon shade. They like consistent water, but they do want well-drained soil. So, but just for the purposes, you don't need to cut them back if you don't want to, but when you transplant, I definitely would cut back to balance the root, the roots you're leaving behind.
Okay, great. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks very much for the call, call Stephanie. Numbers once again, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. And Charlie, just before we get to our next caller, a very brief email you received from Barbara. She says her husband and her have been listening to you for quite some time now. They love all the advice and specialized advice that they have received, and they watch your Healing Garden Show as well. And they are also members of a local horticultural society in Ridgetown, Ontario. And come June, their 0.6 of an acre garden is going to be one of the garden tours for the first time. So they say they're excited but exhausted. And excited.
I bet. And of course, I did respond to them at one point and say, just don't be wearing the headlamp flashlight the night before racing around trying to make it perfect, because I know I got stuck in that too. It is stressful being on a garden tour, no question.
Indeed. And your Healing Garden Show is it Mondays?
I believe it is still airing on Mondays around 9:30 p.m. on Vision TV. Of course, there's 15 episodes. So, yeah, there's, I think, about four episodes have aired. This is a re-airing. It's not a new, they're not new episodes. But certainly for anybody who hasn't seen the Healing Gardens documentary series that I made here with MZ Media, it's great. It's beautiful, and it's really, really educational, too.
Beautiful. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Diane on the line from Dorchester. Welcome to The Garden Show, Diane.
Good morning, Charlie and Dean. What I'm calling about is I saved some geraniums throughout the winter. They survived. Of course, they don't have any flowers left on them. If I just plant them outside minus flowers, I don't know if they'll ever get flowers. Are they still going to be as good as when they'd had the flowers and they repel the a Japanese beetle or wherever it was that kept attacking the leaves on our blackberry bushes?
So are these regular geraniums, or are these the Citrosa plants?
I just got them at the I got them at Costco. I remember I bought a whole bunch of them, put them in the front, and they didn't survive, but the ones at the back of the house did survive. So they had a little more shade.
So if you rub the leaves, what do they smell like, do you know?
Like real geraniums.
Oh, okay. Huh, so you found they did a repelling job.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. And that's... even in the... in the garden when we planted marigolds and geraniums around the tomatoes, they did an excellent job.
Oh, well, that's good to know, particularly for people that have roses, because the Japanese beetles love roses, as you point out. Raspberries, they love anything that's got a little bit of sweetness to it. So what I would do, because this was such a successful plant, you have these plants in the house, they're green plants, they've been in a sunny window all winter, I assume, and they're in pots.
Yes.
So they've probably grown, they've probably been doing some growth the last month or so, so you've got some new green growth.
Yes.
You don't want flowers at this point anyway, trust me. What you want to do is you want to cut off those tips. You want about four-inch cuttings. And you want to cut off all those tips as long as they're at least 4 or 5 inches long. Remove the lower leaves. Just put them into water, and they will grow roots. Then once you've got those little plants, and that'll take 3 or 4 weeks, perfect. We're now frost-free. You take those little rooted cuttings out into the garden and plant them, and they will grow, and they will flower.
Oh, that's good.
That's what I would do.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Can I just give a hint? I know you're only supposed to talk about two things, but this isn't a question. My son just did this. Mm-hmm. His neighbor had, and so does ours, you know, those raised garden beds that are made out of wood.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our neighbor, I could hear her crying in the backyard last year, and a rabbit got underneath the fence and ate all her plants she had planted. And she raised them in a greenhouse that they had built last year.
Mm.
So I felt so sorry for her. And the same happened to my son's neighbor, but the other neighbor, he had, you know, the water troughs?
Mm-hmm.
And the neighbor put one of those out. Well, my son just went online, and he bought two of them for $110, has no bottom, and he's going to fill it with branches and cardboard and all that, and then put good soil in it, and then plant his wife's vegetables, because they've got a young dog who keeps going and chewing all the plants down.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I just thought, you know, anybody who's thinking, and this is galvanized steel, so it's never going to rot like the wooden ones that he'd had.
Right. The one thing I know about the galvanized steel troughs, looks like, it's like a big, it's like a agricultural water holding for cattle, etc. If you plant those in the sun, they get very hot. So the metal absorbs all that sunshine, heats up the metal, heats the soil inside, and can end up cooking your plants. So just
I'll
something to be aware of. If he is going to, obviously usually our vegetables do go in full sun, plan to plant something or to put something on the outside of that galvanized, on the sunny side, just to try and reflect the sun away.
Good advice. Okay. Sorry, I hope you didn't consider that as being two questions.
No, not at all.
You know, I'm getting older, and when my husband and I don't travel after this year, I said to him, we were going to do something like that, because it's harder and harder to lean over.
Oh,
and I like that idea, but I'm so glad you told me that.
Yeah,
I don't want to make that mistake. Yeah.
Well, raised gardens are absolutely the way to go. It's so much easier to garden higher than lower.
Yes, thank you so much, Charlie.
Thanks,
and Dean.
Diane.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too.
You as well. Thanks, Diane. Okay, let's jump right to our next caller. We have Julie on the line, and Julie is calling from St. Catharines, and she has a question for you there, Charlie. Welcome to the Garden Show, Julie.
Yes, I have a katsura that I planted about 5 years ago, and it looks fairly healthy, but it's hardly grown. It's not even 2 feet yet.
Hmm. Okay. Okay, so is it a katsura tree?
It's a shrub. It's the Japanese Andromeda.
Oh, well, I wonder where the katsura comes in.
The main, I've still got the tag from purchasing it, and it says katsura, and then underneath it says this Japanese Andromeda, and then there's a botanical name under there, a Paris Japocania?
Japonica. Yeah, so it's Andromeda, which is a very... Okay, you're in St. Catharines. You're in the right place to grow that plant. It is, as I recall, I'm just going to double check something here. I think it is pretty specific for its pH requirements.
Oh.
It does like an acidic pH, which might be partly why you're not getting a lot of blooms. But, like you said, it hasn't even...
I've got tiny little flowers now, the little bell-shaped flowers, and I've had them every year, but it's just not filling out. And it does say on the card that it is slow growing, but I mean, this is kind of, this is very slow growing.
Well, it isn't, it never gets to be a particularly huge plant. Like
it says 6 feet.
What?
6 to 9 feet tall and 6 feet wide.
Really? I've never seen one that size in Ontario. Yeah, you're right. 4 to 5.
That's on the back of the card. That's why I chose it, because that was the size of the spot.
Yeah, right. And how many years has it been there?
About 5.
Okay. What would you do? Well, a couple of things. When you planted it, did you use peat moss?
No.
Okay. It does need a low pH. So what I would do is get a pH meter. Figure out some way to test your pH. There's very simple pH tests out there. Even litmus paper, right? The old pink, blue, acid, alkali paper. So get that happening, because you need to see pink. You need to see an acid soil. It's got to be less than 7. You'll never get it down super low. But even if it's down, you know, 6.5, something like that, that will make a difference to its growth. You will, of course... I would also be top dressing it with peat moss, make sure it's got, you know, consistent moisture, lots of things going on to help lower the pH. You may use a soil acidifier or aluminum sulfate, again, to lower pH, but don't go too crazy, because other things around it aren't going to like low pH, perhaps.
But
you don't want it to be soggy, but you do want to keep it consistently watered, and then, you know, it drains away and watered. So if we get into a drought situation, you are going to be regularly watering it, because, you know, you want to keep that growth optimized. Yes, acid-forming fertilizer like a rhododendron food. If you want to push some growth, you need to feed it with something for acid-loving plants, or what we call ericaceous plants. I don't think there's much pruning ever required. Yeah, and you're good. There's virtually no real insects that get on it. Always keep an eye, but I think it's just going to be a time to, you got to optimize the growth by giving that plant what it really wants.
And how about the exposure?
Oh.
I've got it. It's like a northeast, facing northeast, and it gets the hot sun
in the morning.
2 o'clock.
Oh, okay. So if it's too hot, you'll see some scorch, but you will see that scorch. It's okay. So that's where usually with plants like this plant and hydrangeas are another example. They like that morning sun because it's a gentler sun, but the afternoon sun tends to be a bit intense. But I wouldn't move it now. You've got it where it is. You're good. It's part, what we call part sun, part shade. But remember, the morning sun is always a gentler sun if we're worried about scorch.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for the caller, Julie. Charlie, we have to run for our next break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, yes, we're back on The Garden Show. Let's just jump right to our next caller, Charlie. We have John on the line calling from Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show, John.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Dean.
Morning.
Charlie, I've changed a couple pieces of sod at my son's place because it seems like every year it's like that. But anyhow, when I took the old sort of, it wasn't sod anymore, it wasn't grass anymore, I found maybe 4 or 5 grubs. Is that what doing it?
Maybe. Frankly, there are grubs everywhere. Lawns, gardens, everybody's got grubs. The question is it a thick enough lawn with good quality, lots of leaves, lots of roots, that a few grubs chewing away does not wipe out the lawn. A thin lawn with thin blades of grass and thin roots is very easily annihilated by a few grubs. Your son's lawn, when you say it's in the same area all the time, is it possible that it's shade that's killing that grass in the summer? It's nice and sunny in the spring?
To be honest with you, Charlie, sorry to interrupt you. No, Charlie, as a matter of fact, it was beautiful. This is what I don't understand. And the only thing I might say is because he lacks of water. He doesn't take care, like, to be honest, like I do. Mm. I think this is maybe, what, the third time that I've changed it. And it's always like a small portion. So,
well, there's
so what I did, I took all the off. I put more soil on top. Mm-hmm. I sprayed it and put it down, and I told him. So, you know, but like I said, it seems it was thick enough. Last year was beautiful.
Mm.
You know, so I don't know. That's why I'm saying. And now there is nothing to get rid of the grubs, no?
No, no. Well, there are some nematodes that you can put out, spring nematodes. And then there
they work, though, Charlie. I've tried them once. I spent a lot of money for, to be honest with you. I'm not. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm not in favor of those, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and then there's another form of nematode for late summer, but there's also a BT product called Grub Be Gone that is a bacterial spray, which, again, is a late summer. So that's to get the new generation. Right now we've got old, big, fat grubs. If we have grubs at all, they're big and old. They're from last year. So, but it's interesting you said this, like, third time, same place. So there's something going on. Is that, like, super sunny and the sun just burns the lawn out in that spot? Like, something's going on why it keeps dying in that area.
Charlie, yeah, we have to wrap up our show. We have come to the end of the line.
At the time. All right, John, get back to me on why that sod keeps dying in that spot. There's a reason. Study it. Get back. Oh, my goodness. Time sure does fly. Missed having you in the studio, Dean, but we'll certainly see you again next week when we're back on air. Ashley, as usual, just the best. Couldn't do any of it without you. And the great callers, keep those good questions coming. And we'll be back and see you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.